So we shall read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, Questions by King Parikshit, Text 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Please repeat. Dautatma,
Dautatma,
Purusha,
Purusha,
Krishna,
Krishna,
Pada,
Pada,
Mulam,
Mulam,
Na,
Na,
Munchati,
Munchati,
Mukta,
Mukta,
Sarva,
Sarva,
Pariklesha,
Pariklesha,
Panta,
Panta,
Swasharanam,
Swasharanam,
Yata, Dautatma Purusha Krishna,
Dautatma Purusha Krishna,
Padamulam namunchati,
Padamulam namunchati,
Mukta Sarva Pari Klesha,
Mukta Sarva Pari Klesha,
Panta Sva Sharanam Yata,
Panta Sva Sharanam Yata,
Dautatma Purusha Krishna,
Dautatma Purusha Krishna,
Padamulam namunchati,
Padamulam namunchati,
Mukta Sarva Pariklesha,
Mukta Sarva Pariklesha,
Panta Sva Sharanam Yata,
Panta Sva Sharanam Yata,
Dautatma,
Dautatma,
whose heart has been cleansed,
whose heart has been cleansed,
Purusha,
Purusha,
the living being,
the living being,
Krishna,
Krishna,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Padamulam,
Padamulam,
the shelter of the lotus feet,
the shelter of the lotus feet,
Na,
Na,
never,
never,
Munchati,
Munchati,
gives up,
gives up,
Mukta,
Mukta,
liberated,
liberated,
Sarva,
Sarva,
all,
all,
Pariklesha,
Pariklesha,
of all miseries of life,
of all miseries of life,
Panta,
Panta,
the traveler,
the traveler,
Swasharanam,
Swasharanam,
in his own abode,
in his own abode,
Yata,
Yata,
as it were,
as it were.
Translation. A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. Please repeat. A pure devotee of the Lord,
a pure devotee of the Lord,
whose heart has once been cleansed, by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. For they fully satisfy him. As a traveler is satisfied. At home. After a troubled journey. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who is not a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord Krishna is not completely cleansed in the heart. But a perfectly cleansed person never quits the devotional service of the Lord. In discharging such devotional service, as ordered by Brahmaji to Narada in the preaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes a representative of the Lord engaged in preaching work meets various so-called difficulties. This was exhibited by Lord Nityananda when he delivered the two fallen souls, Jagai and Madhai. And similarly, Lord Jesus Christ was crucified by the non-believers. But such difficulties are very gladly suffered by the devotees in preaching, because in such activities, although apparently very severe, the devotees of the Lord feel transcendental pleasure because the Lord is satisfied. Prahlad Maharaj suffered greatly, but still he never forgot the lotus feet of the Lord. This is because a pure devotee of the Lord is so purified in his heart that he cannot leave the shelter of Lord Krishna in any circumstances. There is no self-interest in such service. The progress of culturing knowledge by the jnanis, or the bodily gymnastics by the yogis, are ultimately given up by the respective performers. But a devotee of the Lord cannot give up the service of the Lord, for he is ordered by his spiritual master. Pure devotees like Narada and Nityananda Prabhu take up the order of the spiritual master as the sustenance of life. They do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. They take the matter very seriously, as the order comes from the higher authority, from the representative of the Lord, or from the Lord himself. The example set herein is very appropriate. A traveler leaves home to search for wealth in far distant places, sometimes in the forest and sometimes on the ocean and sometimes on hilltops. Certainly, there are many troubles for the traveler when he is in such unknown places. But all such troubles are at once mitigated as soon as the sense of his family affection is remembered. And as soon as he returns home, he forgets all such troubles on the way. A pure devotee of the Lord is exactly in a family tie with the Lord, and therefore he is undeterred in discharging his duty in a full affectionate tie with the Lord. Translation again. A pure devotee of the Lord. I read slowly with a lot of pauses, but it's not actually an indication that you should repeat. It's just the way I read. Okay. A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. So this verse is very deep, and it contains invaluable instructions for us in our efforts in devotional service. The essential point is that we should not give up devotional service under any circumstance. Or, in other words, we should not shirk our duty because we feel it could be too risky or dangerous. This particular verse and purport guided an important decision that one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples had to make. At that time in ISKCON's history, devotee community in West Virginia had strayed far from the path that Srila Prabhupada chalked out for us. And the leader was engaging in many illegal activities. So my godbrother, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, was called upon to testify, is this community part of ISKCON? You know, does this community represent ISKCON? And he knew that, because it said, and I think it was the case, that people who differed with the leader of that community had actually been killed. At least one that we know of was murdered. So his taking this position against the community, the leader of the community, and the community, could have had dire consequences. And Ravindra Swarup Prabhu was, and is, a householder. So he explained the situation to his wife, what the risk was. Because if something really bad happened, she would be left without a husband. And she replied, "You must do it. You can't let this man get away with murder," figuratively and literally. And then he read this verse. And this verse and purport was really the decisive factor, this line in particular. They do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. How many of us can say that? I mean, we're very preoccupied with the future of our lives, which is not wrong exactly. I mean, it's natural. But this verse is talking about a higher principle. You know, the principle of surrender. And I think of Srila Prabhupada, the risk he took leaving India at the age of 69 on a cargo carrier, and then roaming about New York City without any real place to stay. And his position was so precarious that every month or so he would go to the Sindhya Steam Navigation office and inquire when the next boat was going back. Because he was thinking, you know, he came, he tried, but it's not working out, so just go back. Of course, he didn't go back. But he did face dangerous situations, especially in the beginning when he had no place of his own. He stayed in the Bowery. He had to step, well, I think it might have changed since then, but at that time it was the most notorious neighborhood in New York City. He had to like step over the drunks that were sprawled out on the sidewalk and on the way to his apartment. I say his apartment, but it really wasn't his. But he was being accommodated by something like a hippie. And one day that person, I don't know, maybe took an overdose of LSD or something, but like he went mad, he went crazy. And he turned on Srila Prabhupada to attack Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada went bounding down the stairs, out onto the street in the Bowery, not knowing where to go, what to do. And eventually he was given shelter by a young man who was like attending Prabhupada's classes. But it was sort of like, I think it was more like a warehouse, but something like a studio apartment, one room apartment. So it was the man, Carl Jurgens, and his wife or girlfriend, and Prabhupada. And it was awkward. And Srila Prabhupada got the distinct impression that the lady really didn't want him there. And I could see that it would have been awkward for her. It was awkward for everyone. Anyway, eventually, Michael Grant, who Srila Prabhupada later initiated as Mukunda, he found a place for the Swami. It was an old gift shop called Matchless Gifts. It was very appropriately named for what Prabhupada was doing, giving us. And then, in a way, things became better. But still, Srila Prabhupada was always taking risks. Another example that comes to mind is when Srila Prabhupada returned to India with some of his American and European disciples, and for the first year and a half, Srila Prabhupada was basically traveling all over India and preaching, didn't have any real base. So, in 1971, under Shamsundar Prabhu's direction, we had the first Bombay Pandal, which was a huge success. And after that, Srila Prabhupada sent Tamalkrishna Goswami and me to Calcutta to arrange a similar program. So we did. I was a good collector, and Tamalkrishna Goswami was a good organizer. He said, "You collect the money and I will spend it." I said, "Okay. Okay." And I never really competed against other devotees. Somehow that didn't appeal to me. But I did compete, in a way, against a big Mayavadi sannyasi, in the sense that I got, because when we would have these pandal programs, to raise funds we would bring out a souvenir book, and people could give advertisements to go in the souvenir. And it was a convenient way for many people to contribute, because they could give it as a business expense. So I got hold of a souvenir of a big Mayavadi sannyasi who'd had a program in Calcutta. And I determined I was gonna go to each and every person who gave an ad in his souvenir and get a bigger ad for our souvenir. And I'm pretty sure we outdid him, as we should have. So now, coming back to the risk, at that time, Calcutta was under the sway of Naxalites, the communist youths, and they were really ruthless. I mean, they had their agenda, and they would not stop at anything. Sometimes they would kidnap, you know, sons of wealthy families. Sometimes they'd even just shoot someone dead on the street. It's like a very bad atmosphere. So during that climate, we put on this pandal. And then Srila Prabhupada came a little before the pandal. And he received a death threat. It was a note: fly or die. And it was the note was constructed of letters cut out of newspapers. So no one could even trace a typewriter, you know, if they wanted to pursue it. So it was a threat. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada didn't fly or die. And then just before the Pondell program, we had a press conference. And a lot of the press were also sort of in that communist mood. And one of them asked, what is the use of spending all this money on this extravaganza when you could spend the money on feeding hungry people? What is the purpose? What is the point? And Srila Prabhupada replied that the point is to give people a chance to hear. I went to America, and because these young men and women heard me, now all of this has come. So that's the only purpose, just to give people a chance to hear. So the time came for the first night of the Pondell program. And, it was huge. I mean, Bombay was big. We were getting maybe 20,000 people. But on the weekends, the big nights in Calcutta, we got 30,000. So it was sort of the custom that the Pondell floor, or the ground, was covered with dharis, you know, like Indian carpets. And then on the two sides, either one or both sides, there would be chairs for VIPs. In Calcutta, we had on one side. And we, to sort of control who would sit there, we fixed a price of 1 rupee for sitting on a chair. So the Naxalites came and they took objection. Why do some people get to sit on chairs and everyone else has to sit on the ground? And they tried to disturb the program by getting these chairs, wooden folding chairs, and like clapping them together, banging them together to make a lot of noise so no one could hear Prabhupada's talk. And I was on the stage, I looked at Srila Prabhupada, what is he going to do? And suddenly I saw him bend forward into the microphone and he started to sing. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Just singing the Govinda prayers. And suddenly, almost mystically, it seemed to me, all those Naxalites who were causing that commotion and trying to disturb the program, they just became quiet and walked away. So Srila Prabhupada took risks, but he depended on Krishna. I mean, even in Juhu, it was a different kind of risk, but it was still a risk. The first risk was that he didn't have the money that he had committed to pay Mr. N or Mr. Nair. So that was one risk. But I think he had faith in Krishna. Another risk was his leading disciples were against the project. They thought that Juhu was too far from the city, all of our life members and supporters lived south in Bombay, and, you know, they wouldn't come. A delegation of them even went to Srila Prabhupada and asked him not to shift to Juhu because it was too far and they wouldn't go. And as part of his disciples not wanting to take up the project in principle, none of them would take responsibility. So Srila Prabhupada went to Nairobi to recruit Brahmananda Prabhu. And Brahmananda Prabhu said that he was Prabhupada's yes man. Whatever Prabhupada asked him, he would say yes. So Prabhupada asked him if he would take responsibility for Juhu, and he said yes. But that didn't last that long. I mean, that's a whole other story. But these are risks, you know, that Prabhupada took for the sake of preaching. But at one stage, he said that there's a history to this. Before Srila Prabhupada went to America, he would visit Sumati Maharaji, who gave him the free passage on the Scindia steamship. And on the way to her place, he would pass that land, that very land. And he'd think, oh, this would be a nice place to have a temple for Krishna. So that was there before he even went. And Srila Prabhupada also, you know, inspired us to take risks on his behalf, you could say. At one stage, there were a lot of intrigues, but at one stage, the municipality attempted to demolish our semi-permanent temple, and they were fairly successful. I mean, they demolished most of it, and one of the devotees had the idea to approach by phone. I mean, it was just happening. They were just dismantling the whole structure. Bal Thackeray. And Bal Thackeray phoned the municipal commissioner and said, you know, this is going on. I want you to stop it. So the municipal commissioner, it's quite certain, had been bribed. So he hesitated. He didn't want to stop it. So Bal Thackeray said, don't forget who this city belongs to. Yes. So the commissioner said, okay, Baba, stop. Okay, I'll stop it. So he phoned the ward office, and the ward officer came personally running and stopped the demolition. But they were just breaking the first bit of over the roof of the deities, but the deities' room wasn't intact. So we worked for sometimes systematically approaching the members of the municipal corporation to convince them that the structure should be allowed. But then someone made the point, and it was completely valid, that we already had the permission. They were the ones who illegally demolished it. So we don't need to get permission again. We just have to rebuild it. So Mrs. Nair, I think she had her spies in different places. So she came to know that we were going to rebuild it. So she went to the High Court to get an injunction to stop us from rebuilding it. And the judge said no. And she said, well, just like an interim injunction until, because it was Friday, until Monday when you can hear both sides. But the judge said no. But that judge had been a chief guest at our pandal. I'm not saying that he was exercising favoritism, but he knew who we were. He knew we were genuine people. He knew who Prabhupada was. And he said, no, I won't grant any injunction without hearing the other side. That will be Monday morning. So I knew we had till Monday morning. And Mr. Nair's main accomplice, you could say, was the municipal corporator for the area named Pushpakant Matre. And then, of course, Nair had his lawyers. So they came. They came on Saturday and made all sorts of threats. And the big hero, I would say, was Srila Prabhupada's very staunch disciple, P.L. Sethi. He was Punjabi and he really had a Kshatriya spirit. So Matre is a municipal corporator, but he was like more of a gunda. So Matre came and said, you can rebuild it, but I'm going to come with 50 gundas and we're going to break it down. 50 gundas? That's not enough. Bridge Mohan, how many cartridges do I have? Bridge Mohan was his son, eldest son. So he had 250 cartridges. Cartouche, they say. So he said, 50 is not enough. You have to bring more than 250 because I'm going to kill the first 250. So you're going to have to bring more than that. So that sort of silenced him. Then the lawyer, Nair's lawyer, came, all dignified with suit and tie. And he wanted to serve some notice on me. And I didn't know what it was. But I didn't want to accept it. So I was I was a young brahmachari. I was running away, but he was like a big, very dignified man in his suit and tie, running after me, children on a playground playing tag or something. But anyway, he didn't catch me. So that was that. So we had to build, and it was raining. It turned out to be raining, but Mr. Sethi stayed up all night. So just a little before then, Satsvarupa Maharaj had visited Juhu. He was my first temple president, and I really appreciated him. And I liked his humility and everything. So Tamal Krishna Goswami said, that I should stay up I should stay up all night and see that the temple is rebuilt. And I don't know if I didn't want to stay up or I was concerned, you know, about the morning program the next day. Anyway, I've said something about Satsarupa Maharaj and being humble. Tamal Krishna Goswami, like, with a sort of controlled intensity, looked at me and said, you know, your humility will be to stay up all night and make sure that this temple is rebuilt. And I thought about it, and I concluded, yes, he's right. You know, where's the humility if I'm not ready to do what's needed for the service of the spiritual master? I stayed up. Sridhar Swami was there. By that time we had a couple of jeeps. In the beginning we didn't have any motor vehicle, we had a couple of jeeps. And he was, sitting in a jeep near the site of the temple reconstruction. So, Senior Mr. Sethi's son, Brij Mohan Sethi, said to Sridhar Swami, what are you doing here sitting in the jeep? He replied, I want to be here if there's any trouble. I want to be in the jeep so I can run away fast. That was like his joke. So, so we did it. And then we went to court. I mean, Mrs. Nair went to court. We went to court. And at that stage, the injunction to stop us from rebuilding the temple was meaningless. And, the judge said, what's done is done. Can't do anything about that now. So, yeah, it's very... But Srila Prabhupada really appreciated Mr. Sethi's Kshatriya spirit. I'm coming back to this one line. They do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. So in a way we all, I mean to different degrees, or have that mood. And why? Why? They do not mind what becomes of the future of their lives. They take the matter very seriously, as the order comes from the higher authority, from the representative of the Lord, or from the Lord himself. And that was the case with Srila Prabhupada. He received the order of his Guru Maharaj. And on his Guru Maharaj's order, he went to America and took so many risks. And then we also, in pursuance to Srila Prabhupada's orders to us, we also took risks. Now, the example set herein is very appropriate. The traveler leaves home to search for wealth in far distant places, sometimes in the forest and sometimes on the ocean and sometimes on hilltops. Certainly there are many troubles for the traveler when he is in such unknown places. But all such troubles are at once mitigated as soon as the sense of his family affection is remembered. Just remembering his family. Srila Jiva Goswami gives the example in Priti Sandarva. Priti means love, affection or love. That in Priti, and is similar to the definition in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, you know, kama or lust is the desire for one's own satisfaction, and prema or love is a desire for Krishna's satisfaction. So in Priti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami gives this example for love, that a man will go, he'll leave his wife and children at home, and he'll go to the big city to try to get money for the family. And in the big city, he may, you know, undergo a lot of trials and tribulations. You know, he may take up work as like a rickshaw, someone pulling rickshaws or something, whatever. Difficult work, hard work. To send money home so that his son can get milk to drink, for example. So when he gets the news from home that his son is growing, he's healthy, he's beginning his studies, so the father feels satisfaction, even though externally he's undergoing so many trials and tribulations. So that's priti. I had one, I mean there were many, but the one incident in particular in Calcutta, I was printing the first Bengali Back to Godhead magazine. And the press was far north in Calcutta. And as I mentioned, we didn't have our own motor vehicles until later. We didn't have anything then, for sure. So I had to get from way north back to our temple, which was in South Calcutta. And it was... it was pouring rain, and I couldn't get anything. I mean, and in Calcutta then there was no drainage, so the water just kept getting higher and higher, and there were no taxis. I mean, usually we would favor rickshaws because they were cheaper, but no rickshaws, no taxis. Just sort of walking, wading in that water. Every once in a while, a taxi would come by and be full. And it would pass me. But internally, I was feeling great bliss. And I was struck by this odd situation, that externally it was a very miserable situation, but internally I was feeling great bliss. And the reason was because there was no cause for me to be there other than to serve Srila Prabhupada. You know? And that, I guess, created something similar to the situation described in this purport. You know, I felt that he would be pleased, and then that made me feel pleased, even though externally I was soaking wet and I had no idea when I'd ever get back to the temple. So, yeah, we should be ready to do that. Sometimes taking risk can involve starting a new program. Again, I think of Sridhar Swami later, after Prabhupada left, when the Jiva temple was built. So he had the idea of raising funds through the mail. And devotees, oh, you can't do that. No one's going to give, you know. But I think he'd read up a little. And so he, there was sort of like a science how to compose the letter. And so he sent out letters to all the life members. And he got a huge response. You know, he got a lot of donations just from his mail out. And so that was sort of a risk he took. You know, it was pretty expensive to send a letter to all of however many thousands of life members we had. But it paid off. And then people started inviting him, you know, to show them how to do it. And he would do more mail outs and get even more collections. So that's also another way of taking a risk, to try something that hasn't been done before. And yeah, so the a pure devotee of the Lord is exactly in a family tie with the Lord, and therefore he is undeterred in discharging his duty in a full, affectionate tie with the Lord. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments?
Raj, I think that lawyer, Mr. Nair, underestimated you.
Quite possibly. Yeah.
I don't think he realizes the forces that motivated you.
Yeah. Yeah, they under. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Mother Sucharya.
When Srila Prabhupada called, went to Nairobi to get to ask Brahmananda Prabhu to take over to work in Bombay, why didn't he ask you? Because you were there, or you had other services to do as well.
I wasn't there yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you were in Juhu. Okay, got it. But was this? Had he already asked you to make a choice, or this is before the choice?
Maybe I need to give a little background to this. So this goes back to Mayapur in 1972. And so Srila Prabhupada, he was staying in that small hut, which is still there, like grass hut, towards the front of the property. And he said, during the British rule, there were three provinces, Bombay, Calcutta, and Madras. So which do you want? I said, Srila Prabhupada, I will do whatever you want me to do. He said, no, I want you to decide. So I realized that I would have to come to a higher level of surrender to get the answer. It wasn't going to be so easy that I could just ask Srila Prabhupada. And later in Srimad Bhagavatam, I came across a statement that a first class son or disciple, maybe I should start on the third class. And Prabhupada paraphrased it very nicely. Third class, the spiritual master will give him an order, and he'll say, yes, Prabhupada, I'll do it. And then halfway down the stairs, I'll think, what was it that Prabhupada wanted me to do? So that's like third class. Second class, he gets an order from the spiritual master and executes it perfectly. And first class knows what the spiritual master wants without being told, and he does it. So I could see that Srila Prabhupada was, you know, putting me in a situation where I had to come to a higher level of surrender to get the answer. So from Mayapur we went to Calcutta, and every day I would, you know, chant in front of the deities Radha Govind and pray for guidance, pray for an answer, but no answer came. So finally, I thought I would, forgive me for this, it's not a good example. I thought I would trick Srila Prabhupada into revealing what he wanted me to do. So I went into his room, and I said, Srila Prabhupada, I was thinking that I should go back to Madras. And then I gave some reasons. And without any change of expression, he said, that's all right. And I said, but then again, I was thinking, maybe I should stay in Calcutta. And I gave the reasons to stay in Calcutta. Without any change of expression, he said, that's all right. So by then I figured that my strategy wasn't working. I sort of invested in it. So I went, you know. So then the last one, I said, then again, I was thinking maybe I should go to Bombay, and I gave the reason for that. With the same lack of expression, you could say, he said, that's all right. So, okay, back to square one, as they say.
Got them all three. Check me.
Yeah. But I felt happy that he couldn't be tricked by me. But I still didn't have an answer. And meanwhile, Srila Prabhupada left Calcutta and went to Bombay. And then, one day, I just had a revelation, you could say, that I should go to Bombay. That it, you know, it was the head office. And, I mean, I had a whole reasoning why I should go to Bombay, which I believe was correct, and Prabhupada definitely approved. He said, yes, come to Bombay as soon as possible. So yeah, I wasn't there at the very beginning. And then they were having some difficulty in East Africa without Brahmananda, so Prabhupada sent Brahmananda back there, and then he put me in charge. Which was not what I had in mind when I proposed to come to Bombay to be in charge of the project. No, I was thinking I would organize the life membership and service the life members. But that was another, I guess you could say, test. So Srila Prabhupada held a meeting, because Brahmananda was going back to Nairobi. So Madhuvisa had been there, but he needed a change. Prabhupada said he needed a change. He did. He was going to go to Australia. So there was a meeting. Who was going to take charge? And it was really sort of tense. It was silent. Silent. Then he looked at me and he said, so Giriraj, you will take charge? And my mind rebelled totally against that idea. And but with my intelligence, I was convinced that, you know, the secret of success in spiritual life is to follow the order of the spiritual master. I learned that from Tamal Krishna Goswami. So I somehow said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And then he looked at me and he said, now the whole responsibility is on you. And he started to laugh. And I was thinking, not really thinking, but my mind was thinking, you know, how could he say that? Doesn't he know how I'm feeling? It's like it's probably you did. But yeah, I did. Surrendered. And I'm glad I did. For sure. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, then there was a sort of a veiled promise. So I was there for 3 years, and then I got very sick with jaundice. And eventually Srila Prabhupada said, you know, as long as Giriraj stays in Bombay, he won't be able to get better. So so I went back to America, and fortunately a family friend, a doctor, he was like a world authority on the liver. So anyway, he's sort of treated me. And but I didn't want to stay there at my parents' home too long, so then I went to Los Angeles. And but while I was at home, at my parents' home, a family friend who was a psychologist came to visit. And you know, I was pretty sick. I was in bed, and he came in to see me. And she said, tell me, Glenn, did you feel that your parents didn't love you? And I said, which parents? I've had so many lives in it. In every life I've had different parents. So it's like whatever she asked, you know, I replied in a Krishna conscious philosophical way. And then she left. She left the room. She didn't close the door, or at least not completely. And I overheard her speaking to my parents, saying, you know, I'm sorry, I don't think there's anything I can do. So then from Chicago, I went to LA. And when I got there, I related that incident to Srila Prabhupada. And he said, yes, you've been permanently infected. You cannot be cured. So then different devotees had ideas like how I could be useful in America, like editor of BTG, and some devotees are saying, like, I can cultivate big people. I don't know how, but there was John Lindley, he was the mayor of New York, and he was like a possible presidential. Somehow they thought I could cultivate him. And but Srila Prabhupada wanted me to go back. He told them, the people who were making these suggestions, that Dhiraj has too many friends in Bombay. He has to go back. And our supporters like to have someone that they can approach, who they feel will listen to them, and they have a relationship with. So, at one stage, so many little interesting exchanges. So at one stage, because Tamal Krishna Goswami was in Bombay, at one stage, but it turned out not to be true. Prabhupada said later that the situation changed, but at that time he said, Tamal can't function without Dhiraj, so Dhiraj has to go back. But then later, I don't feel so comfortable about saying that. But then at a certain stage, Prabhupada felt, I should go now. I've recovered sufficiently, and he used the phrase, back home, back to Bombay. I should go back home, back to Bombay. Sort of echoing the phrase, back home, back to Godhead. And I took it as a sort of subtler, indirect promise or benediction, something like that. So, all right. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
So, for the parents' incident, after that, you never visited your parents, or how you visited them, or you took care of them, and how did you take care of them?
Oh, well, I had been in India for 3 years. Before I went back, I got sick and went back. And that was the pattern for a while. I'll go back every 3 years. It wasn't exactly planned out, but it was, I'd go back every 3 years. Then every 2 years. Then every year. And, in the meantime, Srila Prabhupada left. But yeah, in their last days, I was there with both of them. But yeah, my father, although he didn't like that I was in the movement, but he did appreciate Srila Prabhupada. I mean, the first time, maybe that was the second time. I think the first time was in Boston. My father tried to bribe me, with $1 million to come back home. And then, I guess it was the second time in Calcutta. So, they came to meet me, and, Srila Prabhupada told me, they're coming all this way, I have to spend time with them. Which was good for him to say, because I was thinking, sort of maybe a waste of time. They're coming all this way, I have to spend time with them. And he also said, don't ask them for anything. Otherwise, they'll think we don't take care of our people. Okay. So they came, and they met with Srila Prabhupada in his darshan room, you could say, in the old Calcutta temple, which we still have. And Srila Prabhupada wove this amazing net of narrative around my father. He began by saying when he was a pharmacist in Allahabad, one of his customers was Motilal Nehru, the father of Jawaharlal Nehru. And at that time, Gandhi was making an appeal that every family should give one son for the freedom movement. So Motilal Nehru was telling Srila Prabhupada then that he was thinking of giving Jawaharlal Nehru because he was useless. Now this was a very, sort of an intelligent thing for Srila Prabhupada to say to my father to, work on my father's prejudices. You know, like, then, of course now it's very different, but then, you know, people would think if someone is like a head of state, they have some qualification, some good qualification. Then he said that Motilal Nehru was a made in England man, meaning that if Srila Prabhupada was selling the exact same medicine made in India and the exact same medicine made in England, and selling the one from England for 10 times the price, he would take the one made in England. And the way he explained it, it was like ludicrous that he was spending 10 times more just because it was made in England. So that was also working on, what was probably a prejudice in my father that, you know, Western things are superior to Indian things. So they were discussing back and forth. And then he came to the point, which was he wanted me back. And he said, I want to make a trust with $1 million in it. For my son, and I want him to come to Chicago. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, you can send the documents, he will sign. Which was not my father's idea. And but my mother's concern was my health, because I had been sick and I was pretty thin. So, and in those days, many people, including my parents, had the idea if you don't eat meat, you can't get enough protein. So that was her concern. And so, anyway, that comes just a little later. So, anyway, Srila Prabhupada said that, let your son stay with me for 6 months. It was like October. And when I go to the West, when I go to America in 6 months, I'll bring him with me. And I said to my father, see how intelligent Srila Prabhupada is, that when the weather is good in India, he stays in India, and then when it's good in America, he goes to America. And by then, my father was getting pretty enlivened by Srila Prabhupada's association, and he said, no, he is intelligent. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, your son is intelligent because he has understood my strategy. And then my father said, no, you are intelligent. And then Srila Prabhupada said, well, I guess I must be. Otherwise, how could I attract so many intelligent young men like your son? So then my mother saw, like, you know, I wasn't going to be coming immediately. And she started to cry. So then Srila Prabhupada, he'd always have sweets on his desk, and in Calcutta he had, I guess, whatever, a school or a sandesh. So he gave some to my father and to her. And he said, this is, you know, this is made of cheese. This is very high in protein. And then he turned to me and said, you must eat 2 dozen rasgulla and sandesh every day. Which I guess I'm working on. Maybe when I get a spiritual body. I'm so lucky. Yeah. So, anyway, it all ended on quite a nice note. And as we were leaving, my father said to me, I'll say 2 things about your master. One, he's a brilliant organizer. And 2, he really knows how to deal with people. And in my father's value system, those were like the 2 highest compliments that he could pay to anyone. So after some time, Srila Prabhupada received an invitation to go to Madras. And I went. It wasn't working for him to go at that time, but he wanted someone to go. So I went. And staying at different supporters' homes and eating lots of idlis and dosas, and I put on quite a bit of weight. Then eventually we arranged a program for Srila Prabhupada, and he came and he saw that I'd gained weight, and he said, you should take a picture of yourself and send it to your mother. He was so mindful, so caring. Yeah. So, any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a concern. My name's Ryan. I'm strongly supportive of Earth, Gaia, the atmosphere, and our planet. And what I'm wondering is, for instance, Mumbai, homes about 18 million people, is at risk of being virtually swept away by coastal flooding. Down to low-lying regions, and so by 2050, if we reach 2 degrees Celsius above warming, the temple, Calcutta, everything will be underwater. How do you figure climate change into your spiritual practice? That what I'm hearing is a lot of traveling around and flying, and now that we know that carbon emissions are melting the ice caps and causing sea levels to rise, so how do you feel about that?
I'm just telling you, I don't know if I'm addressing your question exactly, but there are, and have you read the Bhagavad Gita? Do you know anything about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness?
Something, very little.
Yeah. So there are higher beings, not on the same level as God, but they're like deputies of God who are entrusted with different aspects of the management of the universe. They're called demigods. So it's a different concept, but the same principle would apply. Someone was asking about like the consequences of a nuclear holocaust. How scientifically it would pollute the whole planet. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, that's true. But the demigods can, like with one stroke, nullify that. So what you say is true, in a way. But I think there's a certain urgency that Prabhupada felt and we feel to bring Krishna consciousness to people. Otherwise, as a lifestyle, he advocated self-sufficient farm communities, power by oxen. He didn't, what to speak of flying, he didn't even want automobiles. He said we should just use ox carts. So that's the ideal way of life that he presented for us. But to get from where we are now to there, we have to travel and teach. But he did say that that in the future, but anyway, this it could come to that we're forced to live a simpler life on the land, that the artificial civilization that's going on now will not be able to sustain itself. And we'll be forced to live like that, and so we might as well be prepared and live like that. At least we should have some exemplary communities where we live like that. There's one in Pennsylvania called Gita Nagari, very successful. Some, farming and agriculture. I forget all the details, but it's such an important example for the future that students from Ivy League colleges, I guess they have a choice now. Like during their holidays, they can, I don't know if you call it social work or field trip, but something they can come and get credit by doing service at Gita Nagari. And they've actually gotten some state funding. It was sort of a funny thing. They went, because with us being Hare Krishnas, without knowing anything else, there are going to be people who don't like us just because we're Hare Krishnas. So the representative from the farm, Gita Nagari, went to the U.S. agency that gave money to support farm projects. Or certain types of farm projects, and there was a lady. I think she was in charge. Who was very negative. But there was a man who was. He actually appreciated what we were doing and wanted to support it. So he asked for the devotees' details. And then later he contacted the devotee and said, I couldn't speak with her in the office, but I actually want to help you. I think you're doing very good work and we need this. And they've actually gotten a couple of grants. So, yeah, there's hope, there's examples.